latest edition of Sitting Around Talking Movies. I'm Neil Rosen, joined as always by Bill Brigoli.
That would be me.
And Bill McCuddy.
I'm excited it's the latest edition. I have no idea what that means.
And we're joined by our frequent, longtime collaborator, guest, Perry Nemiroff.
Our collider, someone we like colliding with.
Hello from L.A.
From L.A., that's right, calling in from L.A., from Perry Nemiroff, from the website Collider, who's going to tell us, we're going to lead the show with this. Perry spent extensive time at the Toronto Film Festival. And man, a lot of the movies that are going to be probably coming up for Oscars, you saw there, wouldn't you say that, Perry?
I saw a good deal of them. Unfortunately, I couldn't see every single one of them, and I'm already kicking myself for not seeing the award-winning Green Book, which I hear was a big, big hit. But I did catch most of the others that we'll probably be talking about for the rest of the year through award season.
So tell me some of the great things that you saw at Toronto.
It's hard to pick a best of the best, but I'll start with one that probably isn't going to be an Oscar contender. I went to the world premiere screening of Halloween, and you guys know how much I love horror movies, and they finally did it. They finally made a good installment of Halloween. I think it's the pretty much the ideal blend of nostalgia for the franchise, capturing what that original movie did, and then also kind of taking the story of Laurie Strode a really strong step forward. So I was so pleasantly surprised to see how well they pulled that one off.
So Jamie Curtis returns to the same character. Now, she hasn't been in any of the sequel Halloweens. There were tons of Halloweens other than that original, if I'm not mistaken.
No,
correct?
She was in the one with her mom that was the Halloween 30, right, or whatever that was called?
She has been in other movies. I think you're talking about Halloween H2O. But
right.
What this one does is this one completely ignores every single movie in the Halloween franchise except for the original. So basically picks up 40 years after the original film.
So Mike Myers is 65?
He is definitely older.
Does he move slowly? Does he have a walker?
Oh, he is just as threatening. He's older, but he's still as vicious and deadly as ever.
So I've seen the trailer to this, not the film, and it makes Jamie Lee Curtis look a little ridiculous. Now, you're not the first person to say that this movie is good, but in the trailer, she's running around like a lunatic telling all the kids, which they love,
go
inside, don't go get candy, you're in danger.
What would you do if you suffered through the events of that first film and basically for 40 years you're sitting there and thinking what's going to happen if he ever gets out?
So do they pay any kind of homage, you know, little Easter eggs to the first movie with, like, you know...
So many. But the cool thing about it is they're all worked into the film so that it'll never take away anything for someone who isn't familiar with the first film of the franchise. This is a good story that I think stands on its own two feet. But if you know the original very, very well, there is tons of little Easter eggs and nods to that one throughout the entire movie.
All right, let's move on. Tell me something that you think could be in the Oscar running that you saw at Toronto.
I think I'm going to go with I Know is going to be in the Oscar conversation with that, and I'm going to say A Star Is Born. It's an exceptional film. It's an exceptional feature directorial debut for Bradley Cooper, and it's not just a really well-done film. He has an incredible eye and sense of style, and the whole idea of them remaking that story yet again, yes, the story follows the very familiar beats, but between his unique directing style and then what the two of them, him and Lady Gaga, bring to those two roles and the intense chemistry that they have, this movie feels like a well worthwhile rendition of that story, and it truly makes everything you know about the series history just melt away, and you're just looking at these two people like two fully realized characters.
I see this as a Golden Globe movie, absolutely, but you're saying it really could be an Oscar film?
I think at this point in time, Bradley Cooper would be one of my top picks for a Best Director nomination.
For director.
Wow. Yeah.
And
I think I'm rooting for him more in the directing category than in the acting category, even though I think he's fantastic as an actor in the film. I'm just so astounded by how good he is behind the lens right now.
And Neil's right. Can he sing?
He can definitely sing.
Really?
He can sing, and you don't need me to tell you that, Lady Gaga is just, like, bubbling over with talent. She's an incredibly natural actress, and she has so much chemistry with him, but also you get to hear her sing throughout the entire film, and one performance after the next in this thing is just show-stopping. But it's also not one of those musicals where it makes you feel like, okay, pause on the story, let's see them sing a song. A lot of the songs that they work on throughout the movie reflect their relationship and what they're going through, so it's all just so beautifully woven in.
Are you familiar with any, have you seen any of the other A Star Is Born versions?
I have.
And do you think this is better than the Streisand?
Did she wipe the floor with Streisand?
So I think I take to this one more.
Yeah, I was never a huge fan. Bill McCuddy likes it. I do.
I like Watch Closely. Now I like Chris Christopherson. I like.
And I'm not that familiar with the Judy Garland, James Mason one. And then
that one's awesome.
And then there was another one before that. With
Frederick March and I think Janet Gaynor. Yeah. So one of the things that I think works really well for this movie from a marketing standpoint, Perry, is that
it's got Lady Gaga in
We're so used to Lady Gaga like not looking normal or being made up and with tons of crazy like outfits, meat and other byproducts. Like she's really sort of down to earth in this thing, and
she is.
But then does she become? When she's born, Star Is Born. Does she then turn into like Lady Gaga and start wearing crazy outfits and have the platinum hair and all that stuff, or does she stay looking?
Not entirely. I guess there are some more elaborate costuming. You know, once she really becomes famous and starts doing performances and stuff, but this feels like a really emotional human story to me, and she kind of just, you know, her whole image and just the Lady Gaga name is so huge, and the fact that she's able to have that melt away and just completely become Ally in this was really, really impressive to me.
So wait, one last thing on this, and then I know Neil will have one more thing, I'm sure. The ascension to stardom is always the same in these movies, but the thing that never really rings true for me is the fall of the star. So is Bradley Cooper cliche ridden in his drunken sort of fall from the heights?
No, I think his performance, he handles it incredibly well. And it's, you know, it's one of those things where it's not even just about the buildup of the stardom. It's the build of their relationship. And you get so swept up by their romance and how it pairs with the rise of her career that when it all starts to crumble, it had that really strong foundation. So when things start to go wrong, it's going to break your heart.
Okay. So what else have you seen, Perry? Give me some other big contenders.
Another big one for me was First Man. I am a big fan of Whiplash. I am a huge fan of La La Land. And now Damien Chazelle did something that felt completely different with First Man, but yet again is just exceptional work across
the
board.
Can you buy Ryan Gosling as Neil Armstrong?
Absolutely. I think one of the things that I had heard regarding negative comments coming out of First Man is, Ryan Gosling, there's not that much to him. He's not that exciting. But the thing is, why would you hire someone to man a mission like that unless they were, you know, stoic and focused and they knew their stuff? So I think he's got like this quiet confidence to him that's really, really effective. And it makes you believe that he's Neil Armstrong. But the smart thing that Damien Chazelle does is put the focus on, especially a part of the story that we don't really hear about too often. It's the family, it's the emotion, it's the risk, and Claire Foy as his wife is definitely one to watch this award season.
I love that speech where she's yelling at these guys at NASA. She says, "You're just a bunch of little boys and you don't really know what you're doing. You're gonna kill my husband," is basically what she's saying.
Well,
and that scene was very powerful in the movie, but there's one other scene that I don't think I'll be able to shake for a very, very long time, and she is the driving force of that scene.
Well, is she a Best Actress nominee while we're talking Oscars?
Supporting. I think she is almost definitely in the race for supporting.
Well, you know, what I've read about the film, and I'm actually seeing the film like in a few days, is that unlike, let's say, Apollo 13 or even The Right Stuff, which is not only one of my all-time favorite movies, but I think it's the best movie, you know, that looks at the NASA space program that was ever made. I hear this one really puts you in the rocket ship, in the capsule, in the lunar excursion module. Somehow Damien Chazelle is able to do that like those two of the movies that I mentioned does not do. Would you agree with that?
And how? Absolutely.
Then how does it do that? I mean, because in Apollo 13, I felt like I was
never
in the...
I've never seen space travel depicted on screen quite like this. It's about perspective. It's about putting you in Neil Armstrong's shoes and giving you his POV. And it's also the attention to detail. There's certain things that, you know, you don't really pay attention often to the window freezing up, but because you're sitting in the cockpit, you're sitting in like the cockpit or the shuttle with him, and you see that happening all around you, you can almost feel the chill, but more importantly, you can feel the risk, the sense of danger. And that's something that I think Damien Chazelle manages to capture in a way that is really going to shock a lot of people, and it's really going to take you on a true ride, but also it's a reason to recommend seeing this movie in IMAX.
Did you see it in IMAX in Toronto?
Yeah, was that on the big screen?
They showed it to you in IMAX.
In IMAX, I didn't see an IMAX screening.
Did you see it in Zero Gravity?
I wish I did. That would have made
What
it
did
even
you hate?
Effective.
What did you hate in Toronto? Give us like
no,
give
I
us something
know what
that give us something that
oh,
was
no.
awful, and then we can come back to what was good.
You want to know something I didn't like in Toronto?
Please.
I think you're talking about it later.
Oh really?
Yeah. I think my least
Colette?
Favorite was probably Life Itself.
Oh yeah. Okay.
All right, we'll get to that later. Yeah. Well, you know, any other big you know. Holiday or fall, you know, blockbustery. I don't mean blockbuster in the cartoon comic book action sense,
yeah.
but, you know, in the worthy, award-worthy sense, or just something really good that you think's got, you know, that's going to kind of take off from this that you saw. Give me one or two more.
Well, jumping off of the idea of Bradley Cooper directing his first feature, you should also look out for Jonah Hill's feature directorial debut, mid-90s. I was super, super impressed with that.
Really?
It's about, you know, skate culture in the mid-90s, and it's about this group of kids, specifically a really young kid who's kind of looking for family, friends. He's looking for acceptance, so he winds up becoming really good friends with kids who are much older than him, and it's just a really, really all-consuming coming-of-age story.
What is the name of that film, and does Jonah Hill make an appearance in it at all, or is he just directing it?
It's just directing, and the movie is called Mid-90s.
Mid-90s.
But did he write it also?
It's really, really great, and it's, you know, it can be tough to watch at points because, as I mentioned, the main character is kind of young, and then his friends are in their late teens, and of course they're, you know, they're into things like sex and drugs and drinking, so it's tough to watch this kid get into that. But Jonah Hill does such a good job at justifying why he would find himself in that position that it works very, very well.
Did he write it as well? Did Jonah Hill write this?
I believe he got a writing credit on this.
Okay.
It's supposed to be kind of autobiographical about some of his young life out there.
Did you see the Paul Dano directorial debut?
Wildlife?
I did not see that one.
Okay.
And did you see Green Book?
I missed Green Book, unfortunately. I have a habit of missing anything that becomes an award winner at festivals.
Anything else?
Sure enough, that's what happened here.
Last one. Anything else you want to tell us to look out for?
Either good or bad?
I would say look out for The Hate U Give. It's a book that I'm a really big fan of, and that feels like a winning crowd pleaser, I would say. And it comes with a lot of really important, timely messages, and I think it sums those up in a really entertaining package with strong, strong character work and a really, really kind of, I guess I would say, jaw-dropping performance from Amanda Stenberg. I mean, she is someone that no doubt in my mind is going to...
All right, Perry, I know you got to run. So, Perry Nemiroff from Collider. How do we follow you on Twitter, Perry? And how do we follow you?
You can catch me on Twitter at PNemiroff and Collider Video, Collider.com, all that good stuff.
All right, Perry, thanks a million, and thanks for giving us the Toronto Film Festival report. All right.
The
Thank
one
you,
woman
guys.
From the Toronto Film Festival who would lead her telecast with, her broadcast with, you got to see the new Halloween. But that's Perry's bag.
That's
People
Perry's
who listen
thing.
Know that she's the scream queen.
All right. So both of you guys, as Perry tipped it off, saw Life Itself. Why don't Bill Bregoli, why don't you tell us about that particular film?
Well, it stars Oscar Isaac, Olivia Wilde, Annette Bening, Mandy Patinkin, Antonio Banderas, and it's directed and co-written by Dan Fogelman, who's responsible for that thing on TV called This Is Us.
Yes. Which everybody loves, and everybody thought this was going to be the movie version of that. And you think, how can a film with Oscar Isaac do any wrong? And then this large piece of 12%... Rotten Tomatoes excrement hits the screen.
Well, I got to tell you, the trailer, which I've seen, looks, and I kind of like This Is Us, but the trailer looks boring as shit. I mean, is this really, is it boring, Bill?
Well, as the New York Times pointed out in their review, everybody dies.
Including the audience.
They give you,
I mean, you say, oh boy, she's cute. Oh, look, she's pregnant. Oh, how sweet. Bus hits her. All right. God. And I just made a big spoiler, but people get hit by buses. People get sick and die.
So why would anybody want to see this thing?
Because, Neil, that's life itself.
It sounds like death itself,
well,
actually.
It's a whole TV season worth of twists and turns and deaths,
God,
all combined into maybe just under 2 hours.
Is there any performance in there where you'd go, like, look, the movie's not worth seeing, but I got to tell you, blank, blank gave a great performance or something, and...
They're all pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Oscar Isaac can't really do a bad movie. He's like, even in bad movies, he's good. But you feel bad for some of these people.
Borderline psychotic and suicidal. And boy, is he suicidal.
Hey, before we...
I felt suicidal at the end of the film.
You know, before we get to Colette in a second, I got to tell you, just a follow-up on this. Watched the Emmys last weekend, and just got to tell you, what a boring show, man. I mean, talk about boring. I mean, Lorne Michaels...
Until that guy asked that woman to get married.
Yeah, well, that was kind of interesting.
Did you hear the fallout from that today? So, like, everybody... Let's bring people up to date with some news rather than something from last weekend, which I agree, the Emmys was shit, but... And I was disappointed.
That whole Fred Armisen, Maya Rudolph bit bomb.
Yeah, that was
the
bad.
Thing with who was off stage.
So the guy who produced the Oscars is the woman... Or directs the Oscars.
Right, he gets up, he wins for best directing in a variety special or variety.
Okay, so but
he wins for the Oscars.
He also directs the Tonys, and he's notorious for yelling at everybody about not going over.
Well,
in
he's
their
the
speech.
Guy that tells the band to You're play you
You're supposed to
when
only
you...
go 30 or 45 seconds, and he went 3 minutes. So everybody at the Tony community today in the New York Post and other places is saying, this is the most hypocritical thing that's ever happened at the Oscars.
Well, you know, he was on Jimmy Kimmel. It was either last night or the night before with his now fiance, and they put a set where they were both in bed under the sheets in bed together, and the... You know, Jimmy Kimmel raised that point that you're the guy that cues the band after 30 seconds to start playing the, you know,
right.
winner's
off. Right, so now he's got a story about it.
And said, this was before what you said, and he said, were you worried that they were going to play you off? Because this was a pretty, you know, this wasn't a short thing that you did. And he goes, I was terrified the whole time that they were going to play me off.
Sure.
So, you know, he did address
that.
But
a smart director says to everybody, hey, look, let's keep rolling on this. This is gold. Because the audience was loving it. The audience wasn't bored by it.
Yeah, that was
cheering.
The only not boring thing in the whole. I mean, I thought Michael Che and Colin Jost were flat. I thought that opening number was deadly, where it's like we're diverse, you know what I mean? Like
we just, solved it. No, you didn't exactly.
That was terrible.
You didn't solve funny.
And just in terms of my predictions, I was right, pretty much right on everything except for The Handmaid's Tale. That particular category kind of crapped out.
And Sandy Newton, you probably didn't have.
Well, no, I mean, I said that it was all the way with, you know, look, I got the Mrs. Maisel stuff right and the Henry Winkler stuff right and the John Oliver stuff right and the
Neil, you have a gift. There's no question. People who listen to this
but I blew
podcast,
it on the drama.
No, you're really,
the drama
category. You're the man to be trusted every year.
Game of Thrones and yeah, it was the winner and, you know, all right, what are you going to do? All right, so tell us about Colette, Bill Brigoli.
All right. Well, this one stars Keira Knightley as the writer and Dominic West as her husband. Now, the thing is, he has a reputation as a writer. It's based on a true story. And he was running this publishing house and using ghostwriters. And he's really stuck. He needs more material. He's not paying his writers. So he forces his wife.
They're literally out of money. And he goes, why don't you start writing? And he locks her in a room. And Keira Knightley starts dashing out these Colette novels, or
yeah,
it's not Colette at first, it's the, she finally writes under her own name. This is very, very, very much like The Wife, the thing with Glenn Close.
Yeah, you know,
it's almost
sounds
the
exactly
same, and it's
like,
back to my theory about every year in Hollywood,
it's
two of everything.
Right.
So this is the same movie in a different period.
With some gender...
Little bit, yeah. Keira Knightley has some nice lesbian scenes that I can highly
recommend.
Well,
if she's locked in the room writing, what is this, a... Is this her character's come to life in an
Meanwhile, Dominic West, who's just like in The Affair, is out fucking some other French broad.
Right.
And
it's very, very
is he
open
using
marriage.
His British accent, or is he?
Yeah, pretty much everybody has a British accent.
He wears three fat suits.
But when they write stuff down,
about,
it's in French.
Yeah, we had a party for him the other night at the Rainbow Room, He and Keira Knightley were there. And he has three different fat suits that he wore through the whole thing.
What does he need? What does the character need to wear fat?
He just got fatter and lazier and sitting around drinking and smoking cigars and ignoring Keira Knightley, which takes a lot of acting. Ignoring Keira Knightley takes a great.
So where do the
thespian.
Lesbian scenes come into play if she's being locked in a room writing?
Why am I not surprised that's what you're focusing?
I'm serious. I mean, you tell me she's locked in a room writing. So I mean, where?
Just one scene. She's locked in a room. Okay, it's not so the whole movie.
So she goes out and has a life on her own.
Right.
And yeah, they both are kind of the toast of the town, and she's getting some attention, more so than in The Wife, more so than the Glenn Close thing. So she's not quite the ticking bomb that Glenn Close is in The Wife.
Right.
But she does have a moment of, fuck you, I'm out of here, I'm writing my own thing, because I can't give it away, but he does something terrible with the novels that they've written together, or he's...
Well,
overseen.
Yeah, and he's selling the rights. I mean, he threatens to do something even worse.
Right, right. So, listen, can I recommend this film? I don't think I liked it as much as Bill.
Yeah, I liked it, yeah.
It's passable. I think, I like Dominic a lot. He's a cool guy. We hung out a little while. He's a big cigar smoker, and he comes to Montauk where he, was doing The Affair.
So how many on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you give it?
6.
Yeah, I give it a 7. So
you give it a 7.
There you go.
Yeah. All right, this is our 7. And you liked it, right, Bill?
Yeah, I like it. It's movies.
We just went through that while you were kind of, you like it this moment,
the
brought to you by LaCroix.
The movies about writers is that writing is not exactly a cinema-friendly process, but it's fun.
And it's one of those, before we go, it's one of those movies, because I talked to a bunch of Oscar voters at the end of it, and it's one of those movies where the epilogue is much more interesting. So when the movie's over and they start telling you facts about how this woman went on to publish this and that and the other thing, everybody's like, why don't they make a movie out of that? And one of my screenwriting friends said, I bought the rights to the epilogue. I'm starting on it tomorrow.
So we may have a guest next week, Alan Zweibel, who's one of the original writers of Saturday Night Live.
And 2 weeks, I think.
Oh, 2 weeks. Well, what I want to talk about briefly is that a lot of movies that probably will be up for Academy Awards, you could see early at both the New York Film Festival, which starts, I believe, September 24th,
Well, and it's happening now because I've been to screenings.
You've gone to it starts September 24th.
Right, but
you've
pre-screenings,
gone to press screenings, right. And the Hampton Film Festival, which if you want to take a little ride, which starts in early October. But some of these movies look really like interesting. One in particular that I'm looking forward to and I'm seeing soon is called The Favorite, not spelled in an unusual way.
Well, the English way.
And it takes place in the early 18th century. And it's about how Queen Anne Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz are both courting Queen. She's kind of old and frail and emotionally a wreck, and she doesn't really want to run things. So apparently, Rachel Weisz is the real power behind the throne, as they say, by having a relationship that's both emotional and physical with Queen Anne. And then Emma Stone comes in, who's Rachel Weisz's cousin, and they're kind of like having a drag down, knock down, all out battle for the Queen's affections. And I think Emma Stone starts having an affair with Queen Anne. And apparently, the actress whose name escapes me is apparently a shoo-in to get a nomination for an Oscar. Who plays Queen Anne? She's apparently...
Olivia something?
Okay, yeah, a British actress who's supposed to be... She's in all these BBC programs. She's like a heralded actress in the UK, and she's supposed to be terrific.
It's not Olivia Williams, is it? The woman who was in Rushmore and that stuff?
But
I'm looking forward to that as well. I have seen a couple of films at the New York Film Festival. Tell you the one that I was most looking forward to, because it was 40 years in the making, was Orson Welles' last film, and I got to tell you, they called The Other Side of the Wind, which everyone thought was finally going to be coherently told. And I tell you, it's just a hot mess.
Okay, so to give people a little background on The Other Side of the Wind.
Who Orson Welles is? He made Citizen Kane.
No, so Orson Magnificent Welles Ambersons. Was shooting this movie for like 9 or 10 years and kept trying to get funding for
technically
this movie.
From 70 to 75, but then he was...
Right, and then, I don't know, abandoned the project or died or I don't know what happened. There was all this footage lying around. So who assembled the footage and how much of this, if Welles had lived and got funding, would they had need to shoot more scenes?
They're not telling us exactly what...
Well, what are we looking at here?
We're looking at basically a lot of footage that Peter Bogdanovich, to answer your question, sort of shepherded together.
Well, they were like... him and Henry Jaglom are like...
Henry's in the movie. Peter's in the movie. Peter's kind of playing himself as an actor-director.
Can I tell you an interesting story about Peter Bogdanovich?
I would love for you to interrupt me.
No, listen to this.
Does it have anything to do with this movie?
Everything to do with it.
Okay,
Rich Little, the master...
He's in the mill. He's in the movie.
...impersonator, was originally... they shot tons and tons of film with Rich Little, and then at the last minute, apparently Rich Little was... Well, there's two stories. One is that he got fired, and the other one is that Rich Little just said, walked in with a suitcase and said, I haven't seen my wife, I'm out of here, and left, and they had to reshoot all of his scenes with Peter Bogdanovich.
Well, one thing that sort of supports that is that Peter Bogdanovich is doing a lot of impressions in the movie. He does John Wayne, he does Georgie Jessel. So my theory is that Peter Bogdanovich went to Orson and said, get rid of Rich Little. He's making me look bad by doing impressions better than I'm doing. Again, these are all theories. And there are many, many theories that are going to come out of this. Cameron Crowe told a great story today about shooting he was an extra in one of the party scenes. The movie, just so we can get back to it for a second, is about John Huston, who's an aging director, who's trying to get a movie made just exactly like Orson Welles was trying to get this movie made. He's got a gorgeous woman star who's naked through the whole movie. That's Oja Kando, whatever her name is, that was
so
actually
John
Welles.
John Huston is supposed to be like playing Orson Welles.
Basically, you'd be foolish not to see the comparison there.
Okay.
So please don't. Then there are tons of other people in it. John Cameron is in it.
So you never answered my question. Or maybe you didn't say that you don't really know, but since the movie is telling me is kind of an incoherent film, do you think that if Welles lived longer, got the funding, that this is not kind of the movie that we would be seeing?
No, I think this is very much... There's a lot of it that was shot.
Scenes that would be shot?
I don't know about shooting more scenes this many years later. I don't think that would have been possible. Or that many years later after... He started shooting from 70 to 75. If he got the money in 85, like people were off doing other things. I don't think he could have done it. What they did was they took what had been shot, which is allegedly 100 hours of footage, and they looked at his notes. He left notes, Welles, about what he wanted to do. They investigated all that stuff, and they tried to painstakingly put it together. They've been trying to do this for something like 20 years.
So why
didn't
they
people,
do it?
Because the estate, his daughter, everyone got involved and said, no, that's not what my father wants. This is what my father
so
would
what
have
tipped
wanted.
So what tipped the scale
big
in terms
fight.
Of the estate saying, sure, again, do this now?
Netflix put up a lot of money. Finally, I think the family was all holding out for more dough. Netflix finally came along and did that. And it's interesting, but I think it's a sad kind of last.
Well, if you go to Rotten Tomatoes, which you seem to be so thrilled with quoting all the time, top critic reviews, and these people, I don't know if it's The Emperor's New Clothes or whatever it is, but these people are raving about this film. Welles goes out with a bang 40 years later, posthumously.
No, I don't think everybody's saying that.
Go read some of these reviews. People are going, like, the genius of this film.
That's what happens at the beginning of, like, fanboy movies. Like, the wrong people start saying great things about it. I think that what's going to happen here is that people are going to say, gee, this is kind of too bad, and it's an
oddity. I
forget
it's Orson Welles, and forget the fact that they're cobbling together a movie that he didn't.
It's a hot mess, no matter who made it.
It's a
hot mess. It's a four. Three or a four.
Okay.
Except it's as a curiosity, it's an 8 or a 9.
Okay, so I want to see at the New York Film Festival if Beale Street Could Talk, which is the follow-up film from the Academy Award-winning movie director of Moonlight, Richard Jenkins. Barry Jenkins. And this takes place in Harlem
Richard
in the
Jenkins
1970s,
is an actor, a white
and
man.
It's about this black guy who is falsely accused of rape. He's newly engaged, to this 19-year-old. He's 22. He's newly engaged to a really nice, you know, pretty 19-year-old girl, teenager. She's pregnant with his baby, and she's trying everything possible to get him released from prison before she gives birth to the baby. That sounds, again, buzz on that one is it's supposed to be great. And if you like Moonlight, it's apparently really captures the way that captured the tone of
that one will be at the Hamptons Film Festival. Hopefully we'll be able to talk to some of those filmmakers and stars. What else are you looking forward to there, Sport?
I'm actually looking forward to Wildlife, the Paul Dano film. It looks interesting to me. It's the closing night selection.
I love anything Carey Mulligan is in, and she's married to Jake Gyllenhaal. He runs off to fight fires and sort of abandons the family. There's a very strong kid in it, and she takes up with another guy, and it's sort of told from the kid's perspective. And Paul Dano, who's I think was great in that Brian Wilson movie a couple of years ago.
I love that movie, too. That was really a good...
I'm really excited that this is his directorial debut. Well, hey, I've got two quick things I want to recommend on video.
Can I just say one more thing I'm looking forward
to? Please do.
Okay, I'm looking forward to the...
As you scroll through your phone looking for it, I'm just going
to
say...
Well, I want to get the title correct. The title of the movie is The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, and it's playing at the New York Film Festival. And
you are going to be profoundly disappointed by that.
It's the new Coen Brothers film. It's six chapters. It's six completely independent stories, all set in the Wild West. And Tim Blake Nelson's in it. And
love him.
And a lot of people. And look, it might suck. I might be disappointed. But it looks interesting to me. What do you want to recommend?
Video pick of the week is the new season of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen the Jerry Lewis one?
I have not seen Jerry Lewis. They get in a Jaguar and drive around. Jerry, I've seen some of the scenes from it, and Jerry is very funny. But the Dave Chappelle one, where they get a Citroen Maserati and drive around Washington, D.C., is really good.
I remember that car. That was the weirdest thing ever. Yeah,
that was in The Longest Yard, the original one with
Burt
Reynolds.
Well, you're the car buff. Isn't that two different – isn't Citroen and
– They are two manufacturers, but they put a Maserati engine in a Citroen French car.
Oh, so
it's called a Citroen Maserati.
So one guy just did it? I mean, it's not like –
No. They were manufactured in 1973. It was in the original Longest Yard. Do you remember the car that Burt Reynolds gets in?
But why would Maserati or Citroen agree to
that happens all the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Can you name another car?
Yeah, the Shelby is a Shelby
Cobra
engine. A Cobra engine and a...
So two car manufacturers go, let's make a hybrid car together?
All the time.
Yeah.
No kidding.
All the time.
What's the Shelby?
There are a bunch of Italian cars that have Corvette engines in them. Iso Rivolta has a Corvette engine in an Italian body.
Interesting.
That was very popular.
Very interesting. Yeah. Did not know. I did not know that.
Well, so we're teaching this guy.
So that's good. I'm looking forward to Kate McKinnon. I haven't seen that. I have seen John Mulaney. These are all in. You're looking quizzically at me, as you often do.
What do you mean you're looking forward to Kate McKinnon? And what's the movie?
In
Comedians
in Cars Getting
Coffee. Episodes in the Jerry Seinfeld Comedians in Cars. So the only one that you've seen is the
I've
Dave
seen
Chappelle?
Dave Chappelle, and I've seen John Mulaney. John Mulaney is a great stand-up comic, used to write for Saturday Night Live. Had one of the best episodes of SNL that he hosted last season.
Yeah, the one with the lobster.
He's okay. He's okay in this.
If you remember that episode of Saturday Night Live.
Oh, but we digress.
With the lobster.
This
the guy
moment of digression
the lobster
brought to you by Bulova Watches.
The guy orders the lobster in the diner.
Right.
There's always a lobster in a diner. Nobody ever orders the lobster. And Pete Davidson orders the lobster. And then this whole takeoff on Les Mis where the lobster is crying. And I don't know if you know the skit that I'm talking
about.
No,
of course I do.
But
everyone
apparently
does.
Apparently when this John Mulaney was a writer on Saturday Night Live, he had written that skit many years ago. And he
well,
kept
supposedly,
pitching it to Lorne.
Supposedly Mulaney's,
saying,
all of his old sketches were what they did that night.
Well, Lorne kept saying no, no, no. And finally when he was hosting, Lorne said, okay, Lorne Michaels said you could do the skit.
I think the lore is better than the.
By the way, the John Mulaney acceptance speech when he won was one of the only funny moments of the Emmys.
He's a funny guy.
He is a funny guy.
He's with Jerry's. I think he's a little nervous with Jerry. They're both good, but it's not as good as Chappelle.
And what's the other? You said there were two things you wanted to recommend. There was something.
No, that was those two people.
Got one more movie we can talk about.
All right,
I was talking about Bill before you showed
Let's
up.
Let's do it.
In fact, you could have watched the entire movie before you showed up. It's called Tea
it 10
with...
10 minutes late. My goodness gracious.
Tea with Dames. All
okay,
right?
Lay
let
it
me,
on.
Let me just... Okay.
This is my dinner with Andre with the four leading actors.
Dame Judi Dench.
Right? I'm asking. It's not a question.
Yeah,
it's
Dame Judi Dench, Dame Eileen Atkins, Dame Joan Plowright, and Maggie Smith all sitting around talking.
And do you want to blow your brains out when you watch
it? No, it's really funny.
Really?
Especially when Joan Plowright complains about about Judi Dench getting all the roles that she could
have. So they're playing themselves?
They're not playing.
No,
this
they're
is
playing.
A doc.
It's like
they're
a,
sitting
it's a
around
documentary,
talking
dude.
About
they're
their careers.
Around, it's four actors, four old actresses bitching and moaning at each other.
Is this right. Where do you see this movie? Where can I see this
you
movie?
Could, I could, you can
in
go
theaters.
To the theaters.
You remember
and see
theaters?
It. It comes
no,
out.
It's a theatrical. Is it on Netflix? Is it a theatrical?
No, it's a no. theatrical release.
No kidding.
And
when is it opening?
It opens September 21st.
That sounds great.
It's really funny. And they also there's a lot of footage of all these women, as young actresses, and it's amazing.
Are they aware of, I mean, the fact that they're ragging on each other and stuff?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Aren't they aware that there's a
they
camera?
They do this,
on,
apparently, on according them? To the film, they get together at least once a year. And this is what they do
oh,
with
this
each
is
other.
Great.
So they
can't
said,
wait.
This time when we get together, let's film our...
Oh, somebody heard somebody about it and wanted have. To make a film. And they bust the filmmaker's chops. And they bust everybody's on set chops.
So Joan Plowright used to be married to Olivier. And they all worked with Olivier. So one of the big subjects in the film is they talk about Laurence Olivier.
They all
but
talk about working
wait.
With their husbands,
but are they
actually,
playing to the
camera?
Are they
husbands
playing
were
it
drunks
up?
And,
first of all, this sounds like that Seinfeld New Year's brunch. That it was Seinfeld, Paul Reiser...
yeah, I'd love somebody to film
who,
that.
Who
people
are the other,
should know that they
Larry
get together
Miller,
every day.
And then another
every,
comedian who
every
never,
New Year's Day, and they walk across the Brooklyn Bridge, and they all have brunch together.
Wherever we are in the world, wherever we yeah. are, we'll get together and have brunch. So this, so did they? Do you think this is a real, honest depiction of that? Of that annual get together, or do you think
I don't know that
do you think
I really wonder.
The camera and
they're not playing to the camera. Believe me.
Maggie Smith yells at a photographer, right?
Yeah, and once she's like, "I've had enough of you."
And where are they? In some British
they're
joint?
In somebody's loveliest someone's lovely estate, and it rains in the middle of it, and they got to go inside.
That's very interesting.
So it's it was probably shot over just a day, and the editing is brilliant, and it's really
and what's
worth
that called again?
Out. Tea with Dames.
Tea with Dames.
All right, so
can't
next
wait.
Week we're going to talk about the best movie that I've seen so far this year. I've been waiting to talk about
Science Fair. You finally saw Science Fair?
It's called All About Nina, and it stars Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Common, the rapper Common, Jay Moore is in it, Beau Bridges is in it, and it is literally my favorite movie that I've seen so far in 2018. I saw it at the Tribeca Film Festival. I will tell you all about it next week.
We got a bowl because I got a New York Film Festival party tonight, which
yes.
People who watched our television show know I love the movie Maru, which was a documentary about ascending a big hill, a big mountain in India. And the same people who made that have a new movie out called Free Solo, I think.
Yeah.
And those filmmakers are expecting me for drinks 10
right.
minutes ago.
If
so
you're in
we watch the bad movies, so you don't have to.
If you're in, if you're hearing this and you're in the New York tri-state area this weekend, I've been doing the weekend today in New York, the Today Show New York thing.
Fire up the DVR.
7:20 in the morning on Sundays. Last week I did Emmy predictions. The week before I did Fall Preview. A few months ago, I did Spring Preview. This week, I'm going to be doing a New York Film Festival preview. So if you're around, watch Channel 4 in New York at 7:20 in the morning this Sunday. Check it out. So for Bill McCuddy, who you can reach on Twitter, at Bill McCuddy, who's left the room because he's running out to his screening, at Bill Bergoli, who you could somehow find on Facebook.
Sure, look around.
Yeah, look around. You'll find Bill Bergoli. And for me, Neil Rosen, at Neil Rosen Apples on Twitter. Thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll sit around talking movies again with you next week.